York City, connected with the world. Here's Tom Sullivan.
Zoom, look at that. Here we are. Welcome to the big radio show on this Wednesday, the 18th of April, 2018. My name is Tom Sullivan, and we've got a lot to do. I got this a couple of hours ago, and I want to make sure that you have a chance to hear about it. The Michael Cohen hearing in New York at the federal courthouse, remember the other day? And that was, when they came out and they said, oh, well, he's got two clients, but he doesn't want the third one, and Sean's name came out and all that. So it was a big shock and big ruckus, and everybody's doing handstands. But out of that, what they got was they said, Michael Cohen says, wait a minute. His lawyer said, you can't just let the government come in and decide what is attorney-client privilege and what is not, because the FBI has a taint team and a clean team, and they're supposed to pretend like they never saw what they went through, even though. So the Michael Cohen's lawyer said, hey, Your Honor, why don't we have a special master? And Judge Wood said, maybe, but submit your names to who a special master would be that you would agree with. And so the defense, Michael Cohen's lawyers, put together their special master list of five people that they trust would be fair and impartial. Then the prosecution from the U.S. Attorney's Office would submit five names of who they trust to be impartial. And out of that process, they will try and find somebody they agree on being a special master. And if they can do that smoothly, then Judge Wood probably will go for a special master. What she said was, I'm not promising, but it seems like in a case as high profile as this, we ought to bend over backwards to look like we are really, really, really impartial. So Michael Cohen's lawyers have announced four names to be special masters that they think would be impartial, that would go through all of the stuff that the FBI seized from his home and his offices and go, this is not subject to attorney-client privilege, so we can use that in the court, and this is subject to attorney-client privilege, so you can't, prosecutors, you can't look at that. So, they, of course, Michael Cohen's lawyers objected to the raid in the first place, but Judge Kimball Wood has left open the idea of having this neutral special master. They have submitted four names. And, yeah, Judge Wood said, in terms of perception of fairness, not fairness itself, but perception of fairness, a special master might have a role here. Maybe not the complete role, but some role, she said. My interest is getting this moving efficiently and speedily. So the four names that were proposed are people that you probably do not know, but let me just give them to you quickly. Bart Schwartz with Guidepost Solutions. Joan McPhee with Ropes and Gray, one of the big white shoe law firms here in New York. Ty Park with Park Jensen Bennett, another big white shoe firm. And George Canellos of Milbank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy. So these are the names that have been submitted by Michael Cohen saying, I trust these people. All right? The backgrounds, however, Schwartz, the first one, Bart Schwartz, he was a former assistant U.S. attorney for Rudy Giuliani when Rudy was a U.S. attorney in New York. McPhee, Joan McPhee, Ty Park, and George Canellos are all former prosecutors in the Southern District of New York. So this is interesting because Cohen's the guy that picked these people. One of them, assistant U.S. attorney. The other four were also former U.S. assistant U.S. attorneys. They're all from the office that is that used to work at the office that is currently prosecuting him. He didn't pick somebody that was outside of the U.S. attorney's office. They're not currently with the U.S. attorney. They've gone into private practice, but they all came from there. So lawandcrime.com went back and did a little search, and this is gonna go, oh man. Three of the four people that Michael Cohen has chosen as people he would trust have donated to the Democratic Party. Schwartz, McPhee, and Park. And a quick Federal Election Commission database search reveals that while Schwartz has donated to Giuliani, who he worked for, he also gave money to Democrats. He gave money to Charles Schumer, to Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, to Congresswoman Kathleen Rice, and to Barack Obama, Joe Biden, 2008. And 2012 tickets through Obama for America. So that's the guy who worked for Giuliani. Mr. Park gave $2,000 to John Kerry's presidential campaign in 2003 and did it again in 2004. Joan McPhee gave $5,000 to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee in 2017 and a $500 donation to the Hillary Clinton campaign. The search did not reveal any political donations made by George Kanellis. So lawandcrime.com reached out to Kanellis for confirmation. He has not made any such contributions, but he hasn't responded yet. So this is going, you know where this is going to go. This is going to go right down the road of Mueller's team, where Mueller has a lot of Democrats, mostly Democrats, maybe all of them are Democrats, with the exception of him. He's a Republican. And people are screaming bloody murder, saying it's Mueller picked a whole bunch of Democrats, and of course they're going to hang Donald Trump from the highest tree. You know they're going to. Well, isn't that what this is also? I mean, it just seems like, geez. But I started thinking about this, and I thought, try and find a powerful law firm or powerful lawyer in New York City that has not supported financially Democrats. This town is the headquarters of Democrats. It's run by Democrats. Everybody and their brother is a Democrat. There are a sprinkling of a couple of token Republicans, mostly from Staten Island. But otherwise, I mean, Staten Island is a Republican part of New York City. It's where a lot of police and fire live in Staten Island. But these white shoe firms that are powerful, expensive, influential law firms in New York, they kowtow to the Democrats because the Democrats run the machine. And it's a machine. It's no different than Chicago. And in many ways, the same with Los Angeles. Big cities, urban cities, are mostly blue bastions, and that's what New York is. So I don't know what your reaction is, but what he's picked is four people. Three of the four have definitely supported Democrats financially, and one of them, no record of any kind of contribution. If they pick one of these people and they make life hard for Michael Cohen, will you scream bloody murder about the fact, well, they're a bunch of, it's a Democrat, I tell you, it's a Democrat, they're going to be against Michael Cohen because Michael Cohen is President Trump's personal lawyer. I can write the script right now. So the government has filed a letter suggesting the following. They haven't said for sure, but one of them is a judge. Three of them are judges. Frank Moss, James Francis, the fourth, and Theodore Katz. And they are, two of those guys are associated with JAMS Foundation, which is a dispute resolution company. And Mr. Francis lectures at City University of New York Law School. So these were suggested, and we'll see if they come out. They're waiting for the U.S. attorney, the deputy U.S. attorney, Robert Kazumi, to say that that's his list, to sign off on this list. So they're getting their list of a special master put together, and then that special master will maybe, probably, I will bet it, that Judge Wood will appoint a special master. They will go through Michael Cohen's seized documents and find out what is subject to privacy and what is not. We're all getting a big lesson in client, attorney-client privilege, what it is and what it is not. And I've gotten a lot of emails and a lot of tweets from a lot of people that quite honestly haven't taken the time to figure out what it, even try to figure out what is attorney-client privilege. It generally applies if you have a client-attorney relationship with a lawyer. But if you know a lawyer and you ask the lawyer some casual question that's at a cocktail party, that is not attorney-client privilege. Just isn't. You have to have a real relationship. And if your best buddy is a lawyer and you ask your best buddy for hey, what do you think about this traffic ticket I got? That person is your buddy, is not acting as a lawyer, is acting as your buddy just because he or she has a law degree. So it's there are holes in this attorney-client privilege that I think a lot of us did not know exist. 855-295-6600 is the phone number. You can find my phone number, my email address, the links to my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at TomSullivan.com.
Opinions that matter. Radio that makes you think. Tom Sullivan.
Okay, so Judge Wood is trying to get this moved right along. I don't know what fast is in the world of federal court, but Michael Cohen has picked four people that he says, I trust these people to look through my records to see what is and what is not subject to attorney-client privilege. And the prosecutor has four names, but they're waiting for the deputy U.S. attorney, Robert Kazumi, to sign off on this because the U.S. attorney, Jeffrey Berman, has recused himself because he knows all these people. Jessica in California. Hi, Jessica. Welcome. You're on the Tom Sullivan Show.
Hi, Mr. Sullivan.
Hi.
Another question. I might know the answer, but honestly, why do we care so much? Why does anybody care so much that Donald Trump had a relationship or may not have had a relationship with this woman prior to his being elected? They've all had mistresses that they've paid for. We know this.
Yeah.
Why do we care so much that we're going to go seize the records of an attorney? Are they hoping to find other information? Are they hoping to prove that he lied under oath? I mean, like, seriously, what are they hoping to find?
Well,
and how can they legally use it?
Why do we care? I want to believe... I'm with you. I talked about this the other day about if this is a jaywalking ticket, it's way far beyond the bridge to go raiding a lawyer's office. There's word that I was jaywalking, that's a long leap. We haven't seen the warrant, but they are saying that this warrant. Well, we don't know what crimes they are looking for the evidence. The warrant does require, and it's gone through. I mean, this thing's gone through a lot of different eyeballs to make sure that this thing is passes muster. But they had to convince a bunch of different people within the FBI, the DOJ, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and a federal judge that there was reasonable grounds to believe, probable cause, that there was criminal activity or evidence of criminal activity. And the judge and the U.S. attorney and the DOJ all said, looks like it to me, and signed off on it. So what that criminal activity is, or documents related to criminal activity, we don't know what it is. If it's about Stormy Daniels and that payment to her, then I'm with you. I go, really? But I think they have something much more serious. We don't know what it is, because I can't imagine raiding his office if it wasn't really serious. Major criminal activity.
Well, right. But so here's the, well, few follow-ups, I guess. If the Stormy Daniels thing isn't really a huge crime, and paying her off, again, we all know that many politicians, men and women, hire companions. If that's not truly a high crime, then if you let it go, we stop talking about it, and like, is not the full warrant, is that not public information? And even if it's not,
It will be. It will be.
It falls back onto I thought, and I was in school a long time ago, but I thought that a city president could not be investigated for crimes while he was in office unless they were crimes that were committed while he was in office. So
no, this is no. You are right about the fact that you can be you can be investigated for crimes, definitely, absolutely. Bill Clinton was investigated for perjury and was found and pled guilty to the fact that he lied to a federal judge. So he committed a crime, and he lost his law license for a while over it, as if that made any difference. But this is all we know, is that the activity, the criminal activity, or the criminal documentation, we don't know if it's related to Donald Trump. It could simply be Michael Cohen has been doing something. They say they've been investigating him, following him, surveilling him for weeks, if not months. So what he has done, or what records he has.
Why don't we as a public stop focusing on Trump and Daniels and all of those stuff and start asking, what has Michael Cohen done?
We don't know. Again, until we see what the warrant says, and I think that's going to be held up until they figure out what's under the privilege and what's not under the privilege. But I got to run. Jessica, thanks.
From New York City to the world, Tom Sullivan.
Hello, world. How are you? How's your Wednesday going on? Tomas Santana sends me a tweet. You follow me on Twitter, the address at Sullivan Radio. It says, Tom, it's really simple. This is a case of the emperor's new clothes, in that the Democrats are trying to use every political trick on the book, whether ethical, legal, or not, to bring down a duly elected president. And we all know it is a sad, sad situation. Okay. So they're going to have to find evidence of, well, with a president, you don't need evidence of a crime. It says, that it doesn't have, it's a political issue. It's not a criminal issue. So they can impeach you for parting your hair on the wrong side of your head. But short of that, Bob Mueller's not going to be able to indict him. That is something that Congress will have to do, and in his report. So trying to bring down the president, I still, Tomas, forgive me. I guess I'm looking at this and going, I don't know how. So the Republicans have control of everything right now. They're not going to impeach the president. So November comes along, and by the way, the blue wave is turning out to be not much of a blue wave. I know it's still early, but the Democrats taking control of the House is a pretty narrow gap that they have over Republicans. It was much better before. So let's say they take it. Let's say they get control of the House. Will they file articles of impeachment against the president? And in that, they're going to have specific charges, but they can make up, like I said, just about any political argument they want. So they say, okay, we're going to impeach you. They'll file the charges. Then it goes to the court, which is the Senate. And you cannot convict somebody in the Senate unless you've got 67 votes. 67 votes. I don't see it happening. So I don't even know if the Democrats would, if they did get control of the House, even file impeachment. So this bringing down the president, I appreciate what you're saying, Tomas, but I don't get caught up in that. This is about trying to make the Republicans look evil so that the Democrats have a shot of winning something in the fall. They still are short on messaging, other than they're evil, so vote for us. Donald Trump's a jerk, so vote for me. That sort of thing. It did not work in 2016. I'm not all that worried about all of this. Maybe that's it. A lot of you are much more worried than I am. Phone number is 855-295-6600. Judge Napolitano weighs in. He's in the camp that says there should be a special master in this Michael Cohen situation.
I agree with him. I also agree with the president that it should be a special master, or it should be Judge Wood herself. It should not be a team of federal prosecutors, even though the rules say it can be a team of federal prosecutors separate and distinct from the team that is prosecuting him. As a result of what Judge Wood did yesterday when she ordered the FBI to make copies of everything, the electronic data and the paper data, which is going to take a couple of weeks, give one set of copies to the president's lawyers and one set of copies to Mr. Cohen's lawyers, and then they'll argue about what's privileged and what's not. She inadvertently, or maybe not inadvertently, exposed the privilege. Because in order for the government to argue about whether a document is privileged, it has to have the document and see it. If the document is privileged, the government should never have had it, and the government should never see it. So I do believe the president is right when he argues that the attorney-client privilege is under assault. On the other hand, we learned that they've been surveilling, watching, and investigating Michael Cohen since before Donald Trump was elected president.
Yeah, been a while. Been a while they've been looking at him. And I don't know on what grounds. I don't know what they are. We haven't seen the warrant. It's still kept under wraps. People that say that they've seen the warrant haven't seen it. People that say they know what's in it don't know what's in it. The people who don't say that I don't know what's in it are the people that are telling the truth. So we'll see what happens with this thing. But I like Lee sent me a tweet saying these U.S. attorneys, Mueller and the others, are not honorable men. Check their history. They've been censored and gone after innocent people to the point of suicide. They're prosecutors, and they're aggressive prosecutors. So there's going to be, just about any prosecutor you'll find some case where they said they were overly zealous. He also says, I think it's pretty clear what the government wants of Trump's attorney. Any illegal gallery that he has done so they can turn him against Trump. Now you're on to something. Now you are on to something. May I remind you of Richard Nixon and the fact that his legal counsel, John Dean, tried to cover up on the Watergate issue to protect the president. And they finally busted him, and he went to jail. They sent him to jail, but they flipped him. And they flipped Richard Nixon's lawyer, which was extremely helpful in going after Richard Nixon at the time. So I, yes, Lee, I'm right there with you. I think that's part of the whole strategy here is to make Michael Cohen cough up what he knows, because he knows where everything is, I would think. All right. Barbara Bush. So yesterday was Tuesday. Monday, I was thinking about doing it on Monday because the story came out on Monday that Barbara Bush was in failing health and that she was not going to allow any more medical care. She was going to go for comfort care. And I talked about that yesterday from the standpoint of many of us have faced that with our own parents. And if you haven't, there's a good chance someday, unfortunately, that you will. And then there's the other part of it is we will face that someday maybe for our own situation where we are down to failing health and you have to make a decision about comfort care, hospice, all of that, versus more operations, more pills, more drugs, more needles, more tubes in you. And that was the discussion I had yesterday. And I used Barbara Bush's situation because I thought it would be applicable to a lot of us. So we talked about it. And I thought a lot of you had some very, very good input into what we were discussing. There was a email, though, I got before the show this morning saying, your comments and timing on the decision of Mrs. Bush regarding her last days yesterday were miserable. Up till now, you were my favorite conservative commentator. I shall now avoid your program. Richard Dryden, Captain, U.S. Navy, retired. What'd I do? What did I do? So I sent him a note, and I said, I understand you did not like my program yesterday, but you never said what specifically made you upset. He sends me back an email, says, sir, if you don't understand the issue of timing, then I shall remain silent. I shall not get into a tit-and-tat where I am disadvantaged with someone of your capability. Well, I'll take that as a compliment. But I thought the discussion yesterday, the timing of it, we all knew she was on her deathbed. That's why she finally said, enough of the medical treatments. God bless the woman who died last night at the age of 92, shortly after we got off the air yesterday. But I thought the discussion was still valuable, and I still do think it's valuable, that we all need to think about honoring our parents' wishes, our loved ones' wishes, and make sure that your wishes are well communicated to your family for that ultimate day.
Unpredictable, unprecedented, undeniable. Tom Sullivan.
So it was sad to hear last night after the show. I wasn't surprised. I knew that Barbara Bush was on her deathbed, and that's why she said, let me make some arrangements here for no more medical treatment, just comfort care. This is in an interview, Barbara Bush talking about falling in love with George H.W. Bush.
I fell in love with him. Practically at first sight, probably, went home and told my mother about him. She was should have been the head of the CIA. She knew everything about him the next morning. But he's just he's a very giving. He's never once said no to me. How about that? And I heard him say one day to someone, Barbara's so great she never spends too much money. And I'm thinking, yikes. That's an invitation to get out there.
Well, I had the honor to meet her twice. I've met George H.W. Bush a couple times as well. They really, I hope it's not something that we talk of in past tense, of it was a style and a grace that is hard to come by. But it was truly amazing how, I've told the story before, these folks did not know me from Adam, and yet they treated me like I was their best friend. They just were incredibly gracious people. And that just comes from class. It's just classy people. I kind of laughed thinking her mother had already researched everything about George Bush. And wouldn't she have a ball with Google today finding out what's up? I'm sure every mother out there and father Googles whoever their daughter is going out with. 855-295-6600. Tyler in Reno. Hi, Tyler. How are you?
Hey, you have probably the best call screener in radio.
Oh, don't say that. He's going to ask for a raise
friendly.
Now.
and he deserves a raise. the captain that wrote you the email, I can't read his mind, but I think I have an idea of what he was getting at.
What was his complaint? Because it wasn't clear to me.
Well, in the Jewish tradition where I was raised, you don't tempt God's hand. And so if somebody's not yet dead, you don't say they're on their deathbed. You say they're in hospice or whatever. you don't talk about them passing unless they've actually passed. And that's why when you talk to some of the old Yiddish women, you know, they might say something as a possibility, but then they'll always say, oh, may God forbid it, you know.
Well,
or like your call screener suggested, knock on wood for the second.
I have one of my close buddies, Jewish, and we laugh about, you know, whose mother has more guilt, Jewish or Catholic mothers. But in any case,
I think it's a dead heat. Yeah.
But I think so too. but it does come down to Catholics. Oh no, did you hear? Bill has a gallbladder. Yeah, that's what they're taking out of him. I mean, they get right into the nitty-gritty. But no, some religions are very skittish about don't talk about that. Don't say it, whatever you do. I don't know why.
Well, I hesitate to lump everybody together because there's a wide spectrum of beliefs within the Jewish tradition.
And
of course. Same thing for true for the Catholic. I used to be married to a Catholic, and I understand that pain as well.
There's a lot. There's a lot of flavors in the Catholic Church. Yes.
Well, I have a related issue. I think that is worth discussing along with this is that we live in America, and America treats our elderly like a disposable asset or liability, if you want to call it that. I just recently heard from one of my daughters who is suing me. Because she wants to make sure that she's not held liable for any of my outstanding debts, or she wants to not be required to provide any, you know, care if I fall ill or something. Of course, none of that is going to happen because I've already taken care of that sort of thing, and I don't have outstanding debts. But I'd never heard of that happening before, and so I started talking around. And of course, in the legal community, this has become a thing. Where the younger generation disowns their elderly people, and the idea is that they don't want the IRS coming after them, you know, for some tax liability or something
they
like that.
They can't. They don't know. You, that's one way out of your debts is to die. It just is. Just is. Well,
this is the thing, though, and I had never heard of it until just recently.
I haven't either. I haven't either.
Well, I thought I was talking to. I live in a community with a lot of elderly people, and I'm not old. I'm 62, but a lot of my neighbors have passed away, and I was talking to some of them, and apparently, this is an increasingly troubling trend in our society where the younger people are distancing themselves. I mean, it used to be they would just ship you off to an old folks' home, and forget about you. And now it's not only that, they're trying to, like, put up this legal wall.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That, you know, there's no follow-on.
Well, talk about religions. Talk about just cultures. And, you know, the Asian culture has a wonderful reputation for honoring the elderly. I mean, they truly honor them.
We had my grandfather with us till he was 93 years old, and as a young boy, my job was to keep track of his urine bottle level next to his bed. Yeah. He was bedridden just for the last year of his life.
Everybody takes care of him. Tyler, thank you very much. Maybe that is the explanation, but I do have to get out of here, but I appreciate it. This was Barbara Bush saying that in an interview, obviously, that she does not fear death.
I'm a huge believer in a loving God. I pray, George and I pray every night out loud. And sometimes we fight over whose turn it is, but we do. And I have no fear of death, which is a huge comfort because we're getting darn close. And I don't have a fear of death for my precious George or for myself, because I know that there is a great God, and I'm not worried about that. I don't like it for young people, but I know we'll see Robin again, one way or another, and our families. So I have no fear of death.
Strong woman of faith is why she had no fear. All right, one-man comment line band today. Market down 38. S&P up 2. NASDAQ up 14. Price of oil. Where is my oil? Oil, $68 going up. And gold up to $1,352. On the comment line, this caller isn't quite clear how the comment line works.
Yes, I'm calling about making a comment on the current show.
Okay, so you called the comment line to make a comment, but you forgot to make the comment. And this caller knows why people don't put their oxygen mask on correctly.
I couldn't possibly put one of those on. I'll look so bad on Facebook.
That's a very good point. Thanks for coming by. We'll see you tomorrow.